Hello, this is the Game Podcast from The Times, and I'm Natalie Sawyer. Joining Gregor Robertson and I today, it is Tom Roddy. Gregor and Tom, afternoon to you. How are you, Tom?
Yeah, very good, thanks. A bit emotionally drained after being at the Hawthorns last night and all the changes that were going on. I could barely keep up with it all.
Yeah, I can imagine that. We will talk about it in more detail, of course, but were you late getting out? What was it like? Were you there for the celebrations?
Yeah, it was funny, actually, because obviously we file a first edition on the whistle, and then you've got a second edition, which is after the managers have all spoken and everything, and you kind of writing up your second piece, and you can hear, first of all, you start to hear the tooting of the car horns as people started to come down, and you sort of expected them to. But by the time I was leaving, we were shuttled out a little back entrance, and Bilic had actually come out to the window, and all these fans running over to this window and literally trying to climb up to get to him, and chanting his name, which I know must hurt a little bit for you today, Nat.
Hey, we live to fight another day.
Absolutely.
Let's not worry about us just yet. Again, we will talk about Brentford in a little while. But Gregor, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm the same. A bit kind of drained today after.
Yeah.
I wasn't at a game, but I had kind of every single screen in my household was set up to watch one game or another, or Jeff Stelling and all them screaming at every goal going in. So it was great fun. Absolutely wild, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. It was a night of high drama. It really was. Nothing that we wouldn't expect, though, I suppose, from the Championship, Gregor.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, I've written a piece today, and sometimes you can, as a journalist, you can go overboard about things and indulge in hyperbole a bit. And I always say the Championship's the best league in the world, the most entertaining and unpredictable. And people say, oh, come on, you know, the Premier League's better, but it's the best league in the world. There's yeah. So, you know, for just pure competition, and as I say, the jeopardy as well. You know, I think there was, what was there, 12 games, and 11 of them had something riding on the outcome yesterday, on the last day of the season. It's remarkable.
Yeah. It was quite incredible. And we have got loads coming up for you as we find out what the hell happened to Gregor's old side, Nottingham Forest. And we'll hand out an award for unsung Premier League player of the season. Oh no, here we go. I've got to read this. But first, we're going to talk West Brom and Brentford.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
West Bromwich Albion will be playing Premier League football next season after a dramatic finale to the Championship season saw them draw 2-2 against QPR, which was enough to seal second place and automatic promotion. Ryan Manning had put QPR ahead before Albion turned it around with goals either side of the break from Grady Dingana and Callum Robinson. Eberechi Eze's stunning equaliser earned Rangers a point, but was not enough to deny Albion a record fifth promotion to the Premier League, thanks to Brentford's home defeat to Barnsley. Tom, as we mentioned, you were at that game then at the Hawthorns. What were you hearing in terms of the players getting any kind of feedback on what was going on in that game at Brentford?
I think it was mainly coming from Bilic, really. His analysts behind him were keeping him up to date. That was the plan. That was the plan heading into the game. That his analysts, I mean, especially as there's so little to analyse in a game, end of season game. But they were keeping him up to date with what was going on at Griffin Park. So much so that in the final 15 minutes, within 30 seconds, you had Bilic screaming at Kyle Bartley to get up the field because he felt West Brom had to win the game. So he's screaming at him to get up. And then he's literally stumbling onto the pitch, yelling at him to get back because he's heard about Barnsley taking the lead. So they were very in tune with what was going in. And for a game that had no fans, there was just this incredible amount of tension. And of course, I mean, we've heard Bilic talking in these past few weeks about how he's had to be a psychologist and all this sort of anxiety, but he was really trying to build an aura of calmness and confidence, but that quickly was erased.
And I know, Tom, you mentioned the celebrations in particular outside with the fans sort of gathering, but what were they like inside in the empty stadium when that final whistle went? How did the players react?
That was really quite strange, because of course, we, knowing that Barnsley were ahead, Brentford, you kind of expected them to, you knew they were up, or you're pretty certain that they were up. It would have had to have been an incredible turnaround for them not. But there was this absolute silence as the whistle went, and kind of a stillness as the players walked, as the kind of coaching staff walked onto the field. And they all sort of huddled around the technical area. And so suddenly, especially because it's an empty stadium, which is a bizarre atmosphere anyway, you heard this shriek come. And it was Callum Robinson who was playing in, it was his first start in six games, in what was a pretty savvy move from Bilic. And they'd all just started running onto the field. And as I was saying earlier, that it's funny because they just don't know. They kind of, it was like they didn't know how to react because there's no fans there. They were just running aimlessly. But I don't think it really mattered. I don't think they were too bothered by it. But you kind of, as I said, you had the fans coming down, driving down, and they got to celebrate with them. They went out to the glass and were sort of celebrating in front of them. I think it was just complete relief as well. There was this moment below us were where the broadcast interviews were being conducted, and the celebrations were happening at the far end of the ground. And Jake Livermore was one of the players who was brought over to do an interview. They were coming across one by one. And Livermore sort of, he was so slow and he was just taking it in. He was so emotional, and you could sort of kind of see the tears were coming. And I think it was just a sort of explosion of relief, really, because, I mean, we've seen and we've spoken in the last few weeks about how it's been since the restart. I think it was just probably a bit of emotional exhaustion, really, but it showed how much it meant.
I'm sure it did. And Gregor, as it finished then, Leeds, we know, top of the pile as champions. They finished 10 points clear of West Brom in the end, who themselves cemented that second position with the result against QPR, as well as other factors, including the Brentford and Fulham results. But Brentford in the end finishing third, 2 points off that second automatic spot. When you look at that West Brom team, when you consider the championship as a whole, were they the second best team in the league?
Yes, I mean, cemented is definitely not the right word to use for the way that they finished. They didn't win any of the last four games.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And like the way the form Brentford were in, they won seven in a row after the start of the restart. And then, you know, Stoke and Barnsley, if they'd won one of those games, they would... I know we're going to come to this and I don't want to rub salt into the wounds now. But it means, you know, West Brom have stumbled over the line here. Like, you know, they've been very fortunate, I think. That being said, they've lost the fewest number of games of any team in the league. Lost seven times this season. Scored the same number of goals as Leeds. And they were in the top two for the majority of the season. It's just when the pressure really kind of spiked in these recent weeks, they struggled. But they're not alone in that. You know, I mean, we're going to talk about a lot of teams who struggled with the pressure this, particularly last night. So, I mean, there's two ways of looking at it. Like I say, they were up there all season. They were never a team that you really enjoyed watching that much, despite the fact they scored a lot of goals. They were pretty functional rather than kind of free flowing football like a Brentford or a Fulham in their pomp, or Leeds, obviously. they've got the job done, and at the end of the season, when the when you've played 46 games, the table doesn't lie.
Mm, and interesting, speaking to one of their players, Romain Sawyers, earlier on today, he was talking about how vital it was that the points they'd collected pre-lockdown just held them in good stead. And as you mentioned, to not win any of their last four but still get promoted just goes to show the great work they had done before the lockdown happened. Tom, obviously you were there, as you mentioned. From what you've seen, do you think this West Brom squad's good enough to stay up in the Premier League? Because, of course, we know that they have become a bit of a yo-yo club. This is their record fifth promotion, after all.
Yeah, I haven't been convinced from what I have seen that they'd stay up next year, especially after, like Gregor said, it was an absolute stumble over the line. It really was. So that doesn't really convince you. I mean, Grady Diangana, getting him to stick around would be key to it. He was brilliant last night and has been for much of the season, being on loan from West Ham. And, of course, Callum Robinson as well. He showed last night the potential that he's got. I think the problem is why I personally was more excited about Brentford is because there was a freshness to them, and West Brom, this team of players with experience from the Premier League that possibly got them over the line slowly. I don't know. I just don't think they have enough freshness in there at the moment. But I think the interesting thing was the way Bilic spoke at the end, looking ahead, in that he suggested there wouldn't be a whole lot of change at the club. He said that the players that they do have are more suited to the Premier League. And he said, you only have to look at the teams that went up last year to realise that you need to adapt, but you don't need mass change. And I suppose he's looking at Sheffield United and what they've done, and Villa, who are obviously could be coming back straight back down again, but spent a hell of a lot of money.
Whilst West Brom celebrated at the Hawthorns, there was anguish at Griffin Park as Brentford missed the chance to leapfrog Albion into second place. A win for Brentford would have sealed automatic promotion, but instead Barnsley scored an injury time winner to keep them up and resign Brentford to the playoffs. Now, having won 8 successive games to give themselves a shot at the top two, Brentford needed 4 points from their final 2 games to finish second after West Brom had lost at Huddersfield on Friday. But back-to-back defeats means Thomas Frank's side will now face Swansea in the playoff semi-finals as they bid to reach the top flight for the first time in 73 years. Gregor, let's discuss my beloved team, which is very painful to do this. But what I want to know is, somebody that's played the game at a very high level, do teams bottle it? Is there such a thing as bottling it when it comes to football teams? And could that be what's happened with Brentford?
Of course that exists, but I think, I think it's also, it can often be simplistic. They had opportunities in the game against Stoke. I think Mbeumo had a really good chance at the back post. And, there's little fine margins that if things go differently, it could be a completely different story. And you have got to put this in the context of, as I say, they won 7 games in a row from the restart. So the fact that they were in this position was a minor miracle in itself. Mm-hmm. So, there are positives you have to take from it. But there's no doubting that the psychology has shifted. Brentford's momentum has evaporated. Swansea, they've come from nowhere and they have nothing to lose. That's the kind of feeling that they must have around that place now. Cardiff have got the wind in their sails. Fulham, I don't know, Fulham have just never really had any momentum. They seem to win a few and then draw, and they gave themselves an opportunity at Wigan and they didn't do their side of the bargain as well. So, I feel that it could be damaging for Brentford, the way that also the fact that there's so little time. They start in 3 days. The players start in 3 days. There's so little time for you to, Thomas Frank said, we need to sit down and get this out of our heads, and they have to do that, but it's not easy.
But is there not, on the flip side, you could say they've got no time to dwell on it. They've got to move on because the turnaround is so quick.
Maybe, yeah, you could look at it. If you're desperate to look for the positives, then I'll
go
with you.
I have to.
Okay, yeah, no, it's going to work out well for them, I'm sure.
But what do you think, Tom? Obviously, we've discussed the permutations. It could have been Brentford's promotion had results gone their way, had they have beaten Stoke, had they have beaten Barnsley. At one stage, even last night, they were in second place as West Brom were losing to QPR. Do you think that missing out on automatic promotion could affect them in the playoffs?
Yeah, I think I actually do agree with you, Nat, in terms of the fact that it's just going to be such a quick turnaround. I think you can forget about it pretty quickly. But I think the Stoke game was huge. If it had been reversed teams last night, and even however good QPR were at West Brom, and they were good, however good they were, if West Brom had been facing Barnsley, who had just so much to play for, you saw the celebrations at the end and the motivation they had for that game, then we could be talking about Brentford being the Premier League club today. I think the thing with the playoffs as well is that a lot of it can be about these are going to be cagey games. They always are, aren't they? And they can be a lot about individual moments of brilliance, players that change the game. And of course, you look at Fulham and they've got someone like Mitrovic, who's a Premier League striker. But I still think Brentford have those players. Looking at Benrahma, Watkins, Mbeumo, they have those players. I certainly don't think anything's lost yet, but it's not the best. You need momentum, don't you?
The question is, should Brentford be worried about the playoffs after coming so close to automatic promotion? In the last 3 years, this is what's happened from those that have gone into the playoffs and their finishing positions. Last season, Aston Villa were promoted. They finished fifth. Previous season of 2018, Fulham were promoted after finishing third. And in 2017, Huddersfield were the promotion winners from the playoffs and they had finished fifth. So since the playoff format was introduced across the Football League in 1987, third place finishers have provided the highest number of playoff winners. See, I'm looking at any positive omens, Gregor. But obviously, I know that momentum is so key in any sort of position of playoffs or even just in a regular league. But the playoffs can be a lottery, can't they, Gregor?
Yeah, look, it's all about psychology, I think, with Brentford, because they are the best team now in that group of those four teams. They're the best team. Fulham, I think, probably had the best squad of players on paper of any team in the division. But Brentford, on their day, will beat any of those teams, I think. So it is about them being able to rid this kind of a sore week, a painful week, to be able to kind of rid that from their minds and getting back to playing the way they can. And as I say, I don't think, I think there was, I think against Barnsley came out, flew out the traps in the first half, but there were chances for both teams and it could have been very different. And as I say, it was the same with Stoke. I think what we've learned from this is that, sometimes you can underestimate how strong and powerful the instinct to survive is for these teams. We looked at those games and you think, oh, they're playing Barnsley, who are kind of at the bottom of the table, or they were playing Stoke. But they, they were fighting for their lives. And so they were anything but easy games, despite the way they were positioned in the table. And they were fighting for their lives. So, look, I think, as I say, if they can get beyond that in the next few days, Brentford are the best team of those four teams.
So it is the playoffs for Brentford as they join Fulham, Cardiff and Swansea in the mix for a shot at glory at Wembley. But remarkably, there is no place for Nottingham Forest. Sabri Lamouchi's side needed just a point at home to Stoke to seal a top six finish, having already missed a chance to seal their spot in Sunday's defeat to Barnsley. Yet again, Barnsley. But a late collapse and a 4-1 loss, along with Wednesday's defeat by 3 goals, as well as Swansea's 4-1 win at Reading, saw Forest drop down to 7th and out of the playoff spots. They have failed to win any of their final 5 games, and Forest fans, understandably, are not happy. So, Gregor, this is a club you've spent some of your formative years as a footballer. Mm-hmm. Where did it all go wrong?
If there's anyone you can point in the kind of, you can label bottlers, then it has to be Forest, because It's a remarkable, remarkable implosion. You know, even before that, I think you go back further, it's like 3 wins in 15. So they were, you know, when the league restarted, they still had a half a chance of looking upwards.
Absolutely.
And even, as we say, they were, what were they? I think the game went on for 96 minutes, so they were 4 minutes away against Barnsley from sealing it. They only needed a point, and Barnsley scored in the 92nd minute. So that was a kind of, that was the first sort of implosion. And then last night, I mean, it's just remarkable. They, even if they did lose, they just had to make sure that they wouldn't allow a swing of 5 goals of goal difference. Mm. And this is a team that have been good defensively. That's kind of they're resolute. They've got kind of, you know, solid blocks from which they build. And they're another team that are kind of, they're a bit like West Brom, and they're not always the easiest team to watch. They're very functional, but I watched them against Derby County a couple of weeks ago. It feels like about a couple of years ago now. But they were brilliant, and they should have, you know, again, they've conceded so many goals in injury time. I think it's six this season, just in injury time alone. So, you know, they had that kind of weakness beforehand, and it came to the fore again. But honestly, it's so hard to see how they come back from this now, or how they respond, because it's not just, you know, there's a quick turnaround before the season starts, the next season starts. Sabri Lamouchi's just signed a new 2-year contract. He was very, very highly thought of, and this has felt like the best opportunity and the best position for us to be in a long, long time. And suddenly, they look like, you know, everyone spent years singing Leeds are falling apart again. I think we can tell who's going to replace them in that anthem.
I mean, the remarkable thing about all of this is that Forest at one stage were top of the table, albeit towards the earlier part of the season. And I think throughout the whole of 2020, they have never dipped outside of the top six. Sabri Lamouchi's appointment last summer to replace the departed club legend Martin O'Neill has been a positive one on the whole, you probably would say, for Forest. The former France international transforming them into promotion contenders for much of this campaign. And they had key signings as well, such as goalkeeper Bryce Samba, midfielder Samba Sow, and playmaker Thiago Silva. Yet the promotion challenge scenario is a familiar one for Forest, whose playoff record is forgettable, having previously finished 7th, 8th and 9th to miss out over the past 7 years. Gregor, you mentioned Lamouchi's new deal that he'd signed. Do you actually expect him to see that out now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a big kind of knee-jerk reaction to part company with him now, especially after that, and especially after what has been, you know, he came in pre-season after Martin O'Neill was dismissed. He didn't have a lot of time to bed in. And it has been a positive season. They were still so well organised. That's kind of what their reputation was and became this season. You know, really solid and hard to beat and well drilled, and it just completely fell apart. So I think really you're looking at the players. You're looking at their kind of characteristics, and he's going to be looking and seeing what he needs to add to improve. But in terms of his job, you know, it wouldn't be a huge surprise either, because Forrest under Evangelos Marinakis, I've not been scared to pull the trigger. So I think even if they were to get off to a poor start, then he's there's no doubt his standing has been affected by this.
There was no less drama at the bottom of the Championship last night. Barnsley's late winner at Brentford saw them pull off a miraculous escape and meant that Hull City and Charlton Athletic were joined in the bottom three by Wigan, who were deducted 12 points yesterday for going into administration this month. The Latics would still have avoided the drop had they managed to beat Fulham, but they were unable to find a winner despite creating numerous chances in a 1-1 draw. Boss Paul Cook admits he felt physically sick as the decision coupled with the result sealed his side's fate. But that might not be the end of the story, as the Latics have appealed against that point penalty. Tom, if you were a Wigan supporter right now, how on earth would you be feeling?
Well, gutted simply doesn't really cover it, does it? I can't imagine. I mean, they were bottom at New Year. You think of all that's gone on, the changes of ownership and entering into administration, and you think of what that would do and has done to that club off the field, and what Paul Cook has done, galvanising the side in that 8-0 win the other week, with all that was going on, for this to happen and for it to be so close that the points deduction to do it is such a killer blow. And it's just been awful. To be honest, it's been pretty awful. Dreadful handling all the way around. I mean, that you've got the fit and proper, and sorry, not from a Wigan perspective, from outside, because you've got that fit and proper director's test from the Football League just hasn't been strong enough. And you allow new owners to come in and then you punish them for it because they go into administration. And that's not been the stalwarts of the club. That's not their fault, and it's certainly not the fans' fault. It's just so cruel and unfair.
I mean, that's the fans' perspective. What about a Wigan player, Gregor?
I mean, the line that jumped out from Paul Cook was, you know, you're saying that players in there feel like they've done something wrong, and that's very sad, and he's right, because Wigan only Leeds and Brentford took more points than Wigan in 2020. They're one of the best teams of the last half year, so they've done nothing wrong. And you know, I was at the game against Charlton when they conceded, and I think it was the 92nd minute, Macaulay Bon. You know, that would have changed everything. So there've been such very fine margins, and I think they had 6 clean sheets since the restart as well. You know, they've been absolutely outstanding. So as a Wigan player, you would feel exactly the same. You'd feel gutted, but you should not feel like you've done anything wrong. And I think really fans and players and everyone, anger should be turned on the owner who's done this. You know, we've got a kind of mysterious owner of the football club based in the Far East who's made a very dubious decision to put the club into administration, and the ramifications of that on people's lives in Wigan, people who work for the club, the players, people who play for them, supporters, everyone involved, the ramifications have been huge, and that is not right.
I mean, you're absolutely right. There should be no blame placed on those players who, let's not forget, have been playing with what, 20% wage? Is that what it was? They were playing, being paid 20% of their wages?
I think they were only paid 20% last month, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's quite incredible to have even continued to do what they have been doing and doing their best to get out of this situation. Tom, what do you make of the EFL's decision to impose the points deduction on this final day of the season?
I mean, it's dreadful timing, isn't it? I think, you know, I suppose it would have been even worse if it had come later on, given what had happened. The tension from last night would have stretched far beyond. But, I mean, I know Gerald Klasner, the guy who's in charge of the administration, the administrators, he's been in constant communication with the EFL trying to get this resolved. And there's good news, by the sound of things, that they've got this preferred bidder. But it's just been handled so badly, and I don't see it reversing now. I don't see how it can, even with the appeals process. I don't see how it can, and it's such an expensive process as well. It's going to cost Wigan at least £200,000 to do it, to be able
really?
To appeal.
Goodness me. Gregor, do you echo what Tom is saying? Do you think the appeal could really be successful?
No, because the grounds of the appeal is a force majeure, which means that the circumstances that have arisen from coronavirus are the reason for the club entered administration, and that's simply not true. Mm. It's clear that something very dubious has happened here, and you know, Gerald Krasner even suggested that they're going to hope to not even have to pay back the loan to the owner of the club. You know, he clearly thinks that something illegal is going on here. You know, I don't know how a football club can expect to not repay a debt that large. I think it was 19 point something million. It's huge amount. So, you know, there's a lot more to come out in the wash from this. But I just feel that it's very unlikely that Wigan are going to be successful. I honestly don't know how I feel about that. I think that, you know, if there's any circumstances that have ever arisen in any of these sort of these cases where a club goes into financial difficulties, then this is one where you really have huge sympathy for everyone except the owner of the football club, because you know people spend too much to chase the dream of reaching the Premier League and things like that, and this is not really what Wigan have done either. It's just, it seems like somebody has decided to pull the plug. They don't want to fund it anymore, and so that's down to the owners and the owners only.
Whatever happens, of course, it does seem balmy that we're still at this situation where an appeal has to be heard, and that Wigan are waiting to find out the result of that. Barnsley are waiting to find out the result of that. And let's not even get into all the details of the other clubs who have other misconduct charges hanging over them.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, before we move on from the Championship, we've got to mention a little bit of news that has emerged from Birmingham. Now, let me ask you both a question. What do these players have in common? Diego Maradona, Paolo Maldini, Johan Cruyff and Jude Bellingham. Does anyone care to, you know, tell me? Thing is, there's no point you telling me that because I've already told you. We had a conversation before we started recording this, but... what connects them all, I'm sorry, I'm laughing because I can't believe this has happened really, is that Birmingham have announced they're going to retire 17-year-old Jude Bellingham's shirt number following his transfer to Borussia Dortmund. This is what a club statement has said on it. In such a remarkably short space of time, Jude has become an iconic figure at the Blues, showing what can be achieved through talent, hard work and dedication. His caring, humble and engaging off-the-field demeanour has also made him such an impressive role model. The 22 shirt has become synonymous with Jude, his rise to the first team aged just 16 years and 38 days, and these qualities. And as such, the club have decided it would be fitting to retire this number to remember one of our own and to inspire others. Whew, retiring a shirt for a 17-year-old with 4 goals in 46 games in just the one season. Am I right to question this, Gregor? Has football gone mad?
The game is gone. I don't know. I do not know. You know, Birmingham have been absolutely outstanding in the way that they've kind of nurtured and developed Jude Bellingham. But it feels very much like they want to kind of, you know, they don't want to cut the umbilical cord here. They don't want to, you know, he's gone, but they don't want him to be forgotten. He started here and we'll always remember this. So, like, I think they're probably going to get some stick for this one.
Tom, do you understand where they're coming from?
It's a tad too far for me, I think. It feels like the kind of, you know, when we see abroad clubs who seem to be, especially in Germany, clubs that wish players well as they leave, and kind of saw it with Chelsea and Eden Hazard to a smaller extent, but it feels a little bit of that, you know, come to us, this is the path. It seems to be like a selling tactic of we created this guy and they want to have as much noise around it as possible. But no, I don't care who wears the number 22 next year. No one.
I mean, it does seem a little bit odd, doesn't it? And actually, you mentioned there about some of the stick they may get. Well, I'll just let you know that right now, trending on Twitter is, he's 17. So I think you know what most people are saying. He's 17! But anyhow, just to let you know that Diego Maradona's number 10 shirt at Napoli was retired. Paolo Maldini's number 3 shirt at Milan and number 14 shirt from Ajax for Johan Cruyff was the other shirt that I've just mentioned that I've picked out that were also retired. But Jude Bellingham is now amongst those great names as the number 22 is put on the shelf at Birmingham. It's now awards season in the football world, of course, and as the PFA and Football Writers Player of the Year awards are handed out this week, we thought we'd have a little discussion about our own awards. But the top award seems to be a straight shootout between Liverpool skipper Jordan Henderson and Manchester City's Kevin De Bruyne. So, Tom, let me come to you first. Are you Team Hendo or Team KDB?
I think with Henderson, especially what he's done, some people would say that it doesn't matter what people do off the pitch, but I think with what Henderson did off the pitch during lockdown, raising all that money and doing the Players Together initiative, being the real head and spearhead of that, was incredible. It was a remarkable effort, and he's a brilliant player as well. The story, you know, Ferguson talking about not his the running gates that he has and not being good enough. He's overcome all that, and he's the leader of that team. But I'm still with De Bruyne. I think he's the ultimate midfielder for me. He can just play absolutely anywhere. I mean, I think if he'd had his way, he'd have had more time on the field recently, and he'd have surpassed Henry's 20 assist mark for the record already, for sure. And I just think when I look at him, he reminds me of Steven Gerrard, but he's got more. He's got even more to his game. And I think I think the last time I was on, we were talking about David Silva having a statue, and I think De Bruyne would have to have an even bigger one.
So, what about you, Gregor? Who are you opting for?
Yeah, see, I am kind of one of the people who think that what people do off the pitch shouldn't matter. Really, I think it's a football award. You know, I see that Henderson, Rashford, Sterling, these are guys who are doing some brilliant things, especially during lockdown. You know, raising their heads above the parapet and lending their voice to big issues and their influence. So that's great. But it's a football award. It's Player of the Year. So it should be about what they did on the pitch. And it's been interesting. You know, Henderson, that's not to devalue what Henderson has done on the pitch, because he's a leader. He's become a leader. And you've seen to see his kind of development and growth over the past, I don't know, 6 or 7 years at Liverpool. It's been remarkable. And even, you know, it's not just leadership on the ball too. He's often someone who is springing those kind of diagonals for the wingers running in off the line, and you know he's also an excellent player and he's versatile. But you know, you were waiting for this, but Kevin De Bruyne is the best player in the league by a long distance. I think he's one of the best midfielders in the world, possibly the best midfielder in the world, because of his all round ability. And you know, Johnny Northcroft wrote a great piece about this in the Sunday Times. Basically laying out that point, and he was comparing to all these different features. He's like Gerrard. He charges forward like Gerrard, but he crosses like David Beckham at pace. You know, and he's got a hammer shot. He's got everything. He's got absolutely everything. There's very few players as complete as Kevin De Bruyne, so he has to win it.
Okay, but what about other players who may have caught our eye for different reasons this season? James Gerbrandt has been compiling his unsung Premier League 11 this week for The Times. But who would be our top unsung heroes of the season? Let me just run you through James Gerbrandt's unsung 11. He's gone for the Crystal Palace goalkeeper, Vicente Guaita. Also, he's got the centre-backs of James Tarkowski of Burnley, Connor Cody of Wolves and Victor Lindelof of Manchester United. There's a right wing back with George Baldock of Sheffield United, with a defensive midfielder of Wilfred Ndidi from Leicester. Oliver Norwood's is the central midfielder as well. He's, of course, from Sheffield United. Then we've got a left wing back of Cesar Azpilicueta from Chelsea. Right wing, Emilio Buendia gets in from Norwich. The left wing is Jack Grealish of Villa. And up front is Richarlison for Everton. An interesting 11 that he's gone for. First of all, is that a strong 11 for you, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. James has made some, you know, some really sort of savvy picks. He's got a balanced side as well. And I think indeed he sticks out for me. I think he's been absolutely brilliant. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves at all. You know, he stepped into N'Golo Kante's shoes, and he's had the most interceptions of any player in the Premier League this season. And he's a key cog in what Brendan Rodgers has done there. I think it's a strong side.
So you think that's a strong side, Gregor? Do you agree? Is there any weaknesses in this team that he's chosen?
I think he's done pretty well. There's a few I would definitely swap, but
go on.
Well, I actually think that this team could be almost made up entirely of Sheffield United, Wolves, and Burnley. I don't think Jack Grealish is underrated. I think he's been talked about a lot and about mm-hmm. sort of a big money transfer. I think Richarlison he blows hot and cold, so I'm not sure. I wouldn't agree with that. I think someone like David McGoldrick at Sheffield United, who I know he's not scored many goals, and that's what a striker's supposed to do. He scored his first goals against Chelsea recently, but there's a reason he's played all the time, and often the reason these three teams are kind of they are teams. They're the most sort of ultimate kind of teams in the truest sense of the word in that. They play all together and there's no real stars. So, Wolves have got people like Traore who've emerged, but I think Ben Mee as well at Burnley, centre-half. I think Chris Woods up front. Ashley Westwood in midfield. Westwood's got one of the best deliveries from set pieces. I think he's got 6 assists and a couple of goals. And as I say, Enda Stevens at left-back. So there's a few extra names for you.
There are a few extra names, and you're right. There's very Burnley and Sheffield United heavy that you're going down. You mentioned you'd add in some Wolves players as well, but surely Wolves haven't gone under the radar. They're not undervalued, are they?
No, I don't think the team are, but I think there are certain players. I think João Moutinho is someone who perhaps, he plays every single week, and he's playing alongside players who are kind of like Traore or Jimenez or Jota or even Cody, who are talked about more, I think. And Moutinho is a vital cog in that. He's the holding midfielder at the base of their midfield. So, I think he's someone who's slightly underappreciated. Look, it's hard to underappreciate any player in the Premier League these days because everyone's pored over in such detail. But I think in that Wolves team, he's someone who is really vital. And I think he would be noticed more than a lot of players if he was missed.
So, Tom, if I came to you and said, come on, who is your number one unsung player of the season, who would you be giving that award to?
Do you know the really frustrating part? Gregor's just said his name. João Moutinho is the man. I know. I'm sorry. It's João Moutinho.
The thing is, though, Tom, you'll explain it better than Gregor.
the pressure now. Funnily enough, it is the fact I think he's in the shadow of Neves a little bit. I think Gregor touched on the fact that Wolves are a team, because they're a team on the rise, and they do have these star players of Traore and Raul Jimenez up front. And Neves is one of the key ones. I think he's sort of seen as poor man's Kevin De Bruyne is probably going a little bit too far, but he's got those qualities. And so Moutinho, I was going to say he does the dirty work, but he doesn't. He reminds me of a little bit of a Cesc Fabregas in the vision he sees, the neat and tidy work he does in the midfield. And I think he's also, considering he's an experienced, very experienced player, he's changed his game so much coming to Wolves. He presses so much more. And, at 33 years old, that's a remarkable thing to do because it's built on young, hungry players, Nuno's team. So that's why he stood out for me.
Gregor, obviously that's who Tom has gone for. Would he be your ultimate unsung hero, or is there somebody else you can think of?
I think it would be between him and Enda Stevens for me. I'll tell you another one. I think Dan Byrne as well at Brighton. He's kind of, he's the 6'4" or 6'5" left back, which looks quite incongruous on the pitch. But he's had an outstanding season, I think, for Brighton. And they missed him when he was injured. I think he broke his collarbone. They missed him really badly, actually. So I think, no, I think I'm going to go Andy Stevens, though, because Sheffield United play in such a kind of, that position is so important for them, and James has picked Baldock on the right, and those two players I know are among the highest, you know, they play the most crosses per game. They're right up there. So I know he's had a few assists, a couple of goals this season, and you know, this is someone who, I think he made his debut in the Premier League with Aston Villa when he was a teenager, and he's been all the way down to League Two. Was promoted with Portsmouth, then managed by Paul Cook, then got the move to Sheffield United just after they'd been promoted to the Championship. So it's been a long journey for him to get back to the Premier League, and he looks very much at home in the Premier League. That's been proved this season. So I would say Ender Stevens.
I love, Gregor, how you sort of talk yourself out of the nominations. I know, yeah. I like, oh, Jao Moutinho. Yeah. No, Dan Burn. No, I'm definitely going back to Ender Stevens. I mean, you know, very good point and all. Just very quickly then, because we've done our unsung players, I kind of want to know what you both think about your unsung manager then. Is there somebody that's not been given the respect that he should have had? Tom, could you pick a manager?
I think Ralf Hasenhüttl stands out to me. I think he has gained the respect, especially given what they've kind of done since that 9-0 defeat to Leicester. I think a lot of that respect there needs to go to sort of the club and the board, in that they stuck with him and showed the faith. But I think that result didn't reflect the work he was doing there. I also think as well that given what David Moyes has done, getting West Ham over the line and turning them into a strong defensive unit, I think that deserves a bit of, well, a lot of credit. Obviously, it's unsung manager of the season. Can't really go to someone who's come in later in the season too much. But so I think I'll stick with Hasenhüttl.
Yeah, that's a good shout, I would say. Certainly, when you look at their form post-lockdown as well, just one defeat in all of their games. Gregor, go on, give us a name.
Just one, yeah? I could go
just
through a few.
Just please, if you wouldn't.
I'm going with Sean Dyche. I think, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows with him. As people sometimes go, you know, when they climb back up the table, they're ninth now. They're tied with Sheffield United, who have been lauded, and Wilder's been lauded. And you know, they go through, they fluctuate in form, and sometimes people go, you know, is Dyche going to go any further? Is he going to get a bigger job? And then, you know, their form suffers a bit, but they always rise back. They're in the fifth consecutive year in the Premier League, on the verge of kind of flirting with Europe again. The only time that they struggled in the Premier League was when they made Europe a couple of years ago. But I think Sean Dyche continuously does a remarkable job, and he's had a bit of a turbulent restart as well. He's naming not being able to name a full bench as a message to the owners of the club that he needs investment. You know, he's hardly spent any money and still managing to produce and to keep Burnley in the top half of the table. So still, despite him being a familiar face to us now, he's still an unsung hero.
You see, Gregor, you can just pick one name and stick to it. I like that. Do you know what? That is it for now. Thank you to Tom and to Gregor as well. We will be back with you on Monday. In the meantime, make sure you subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times for award-winning journalism on every platform. It's just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. Search The Times subscription for more information. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.